Just after 20 past six, Monday means we delve into the world of technology. The gadget detective is Fevzi Turkalp. Fevzi, great to have you on the show. News and sport websites vulnerable to attack. What do you know?
Yeah, it's quite a surprise. There was a study of websites from various different sectors, and they found that those sectors of news and sport were really poor. Fewer than 10% had used basic security protocols such as HTTPS. That's when you get the little padlock coming up on the top line of your browser, or something called TLS as well. Now, these are really sort of basic things that you should have in this world today, and it's surprising that websites whose reputations are, you know, for not being fake in any way, don't seem to be taking some of the more basic precautions, and one wonders why.
Yeah, that was exactly my question. Why not? When you've got your reputation at stake, and it's not beyond the wit of man to get this fixed, is it?
Yeah, no, it is difficult. I mean, I think it's differences in culture, because if you look at certain types of organization like technology websites, well, they tend to know what they're doing and therefore do it well. And then financial services websites, obviously they have to get it right because they've got a legal obligation. But yeah, in news and sport, it's almost like, well, you're not necessarily transacting anything, you're not necessarily giving them your payment details, but the problem with that is if a website is weak in its security, then not only is your communication with it insecure, but it's also possible to use that weakness to infect your machine. Websites that are not properly secured. It can be used to infect a machine of a user just merely by visiting that site.
Hmm.
So, yeah, so it's a worry.
Yeah, okay. Well, we'll keep an eye on that one. Tell us about this. I was reading a little bit about this earlier. Microsoft unveiling the latest games console in its lineup. Not that I'm necessarily in the market for this, but there is always such a massive, great fanfare of trumpets whenever anyone does anything like this. This is it's a more powerful version of the Xbox One.
Yeah,
isn't it?
So it's an iteration. So, as you say, more powerful version of the Xbox One. It's called the Xbox One X. It follows on the heels of a slimline version called the Xbox One S. And it kind of indicates that the days when, you know, Sony and Microsoft could launch a console and leave it largely untouched for a number of years seem to be gone. You know, technology is moving faster and faster. Graphics technology, processor speeds and other associated technologies are changing. So what they're having to do is, without doing a new, you know, a whole new generation, they keep tweaking it. So this one, for example, allows you to play games in 4K, also known as Ultra HD. So it's moving four times as many pixels or dots on the screen at a time. And it's doing it now at 60 frames per second instead of 30. So again, more fluid motion is possible. They say, in true Apple style, it's the most powerful console we've ever made. And you know, it is. And you would have to ask, why would they launch it if it wasn't, I suppose. It should be the most powerful they've ever made. But these are really sort of grown-up machines. I mean, it's got 12 gigabytes of RAM in it. An average PC, an average modern PC, would probably have 4 or maybe 8 gigabytes. So it's, you know, quite a high-spec machine. And unlike Sony's machine, Microsoft's is able to play 4K Blu-ray discs as well. Which is nice for those of us who still want a physical disc. It's ironic actually to think that for people who are interested in, you know, the best quality movies, the best way to get those it tends to be still on disc. I mean, there are some services which are good, but a lot of things that purport to be 4K, yes, they've got that number of dots, but they've had the life compressed out of those dots till they're, you know, squeaking, and therefore the qualities. Well, you see, because dots isn't the only thing that makes up, you know, quality. Yes, it's good in principle to have more dots, but if you've run it through several compression algorithms to find ways of reducing the amount of data, and you get this, for example, with services where you watch, you know, movies streamed live, you know, obviously there is some pressure on them to get that stream as sort of tight as possible, as small as possible, so that it doesn't stutter. Because you could have these fantastic quality frames, but if your internet connection or the connection between them and you is at some point not good enough, then it will tend to stutter. So, there is still a place, I think. It's probably the last generation of Blu-ray type disc that we'll have, last generation of physical media that we'll have. But it's still, I think it's still good to see that the new Xbox One X can actually play them, because there aren't that many players around.
How much is it?
Good question. I think around the £400 mark.
449. All right, okay.
449, bargain.
I think if we club together, I'm sure we'd be able to buy half of one each. Gadget of the week then, Fevzi, before I let you go. What's your pick?
Okay, well, I've sort of cheated a bit, because Apple had their Worldwide Developers Conference a few days ago, and they announced and pre-announced a plethora of products. So I thought I'd just run a few of those past you. They've announced something called the Apple HomePod, which is not an iPod or any other sort of pod. It is their competitor to things like the Amazon Echo. So it's a smart speaker based on Siri. So if you've got an iPhone or an iPad, you'll be familiar with Siri, which is their artificial intelligence entity. So it's a speaker with multiple microphones built into it, so you can speak to it across the room, you can ask it questions, and moreover, you can get it to play all sorts of music for you as well. It's interesting that Apple are marketing this more as a music device than as an artificially intelligent device. And I think that is because Siri is still some way behind Amazon's Alexa and Google's Home device as well. And the reason for that, I think, is interesting, which is that Apple are very good at not digging too deep into our personal data. You know, when you have a Google service, it tends to be free, but the price you pay for that is that they learn as much about you as is physically possible, and they use that data and combine that data from all the different sources of all the different Google products that you may use to build up a complete picture of you and other people, and then they crunch that data to make their artificially intelligent entity smarter. But Apple, because they respect our privacy, means that Siri is less smart. So it's this kind of balance between, it's a bit like a personal assistant, you know, human personal assistant. If that personal assistant knows all about you and your habits, they're more able to predict your needs even before you ask for them. So Google, for example, with their device, they can see into your diary that you've got a meeting, say, at 3 o'clock. They know where you are because they've geolocated you every time you use one of their services, and they check the traffic on the way. So they can actually warn you, you know what? You actually need to leave early now, because otherwise you're not going to make it, without you saying, oh, when do I need to leave? It will prompt you. So it's very convenient, but the exchange that you make is that you sell them your mortal soul.
Fevzi, great stuff. We're going to have to leave it there, because we've got to update everyone on the road, but that's top work. Fevzi Turkalp, gadget detective, with his gadget of the week, and a couple of stories as well, well worth getting your ears around.